Hi, I'm Victor Burton, and this is That Optimism Man podcast. Today, we're diving into a powerful and promising topic, the optimism economy, a national framework for economic optimism. I'm joined by the two brilliant co-authors of the optimism economy, Dr. Anand Kulkarni and Robert Masters. And together, we're going to explore how optimism can serve as a national framework for economic growth, resilience, and innovation. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Victor.
Now, the optimism economy opens with this fabulous line: our country can and should be a beacon of optimism. There are so many opportunities for unparalleled prosperity, drawing on the strength of our number one asset, our people, and turning challenges into opportunities through our infectious optimism, ingenuity, boldness, and entrepreneurship. That is an incredible opening, and there's already been a powerful public response. Tell us more, Anand.
Yes, so this optimism, the economic optimism, actually posits that we should turn around the debate and have the notion that opportunity is fundamental to our growth, and that is underpinned by optimism. So we've got challenges out there for sure, but we can turn them into opportunities through a bold, creative, ingenious mindset, drawing on the strength and leveraging the capabilities of our scientists, of our industrialists, and of our community at large.
So, at its core, the optimism economy is a call to align government policy, business, and community towards a shared vision of prosperity and resilience.
That's right. And it's about, I see it essentially as looking at the current and upcoming issues confronting Australia and the world, in fact, and see where are the opportunities, where are the growth prospects, how can we have a mindset of change, of growth, of creativity, innovation, and optimism is an underpinning element of all of those things. So a fundamentally an optimistic mindset will drive that creative and positive change to realize a vision.
I mean, this is obviously future looking. I mean, optimism is a belief that good things will happen, that things will work out in the end. There's a lot of commentary today. Look, optimism is progress, pessimism is regression. So part of the plan is, to develop and set the nation on a path of sustained innovation. So do you want to tell us about those bits of the vision that
Yes.
really sewn together should create an even greater Australia?
Yes. And so the first thing is to note that we're seeing optimism as a national asset, one that we can draw on, capitalize on, and leverage. Also, that what we're proposing is to break out of that cycle mentality. So, the ups and downs, the booms and busts. This is about putting the economy on a longer term sustainable footing. Now, there are six elements to this framework. The first is to have a collectively agreed upon, deliberated national vision for the next 30 to 50 years. Building on our strengths, for example, we could be the global food bowl, we could be a solutions capital for the world. The second element is about we're proposing a national fourth industrial revolution plan. Now, the fourth industrial revolution is upon us. AI, 3D printing, nanotech, blockchain are all going to fundamentally alter the dynamics and competitiveness of industries and corporations. So we need to get on the front foot with that and develop a comprehensive plan, identifying areas we can focus on, how we can diffuse this knowledge and technology and capability through the economy. The third element is we recognize that change impacts unevenly, that there are challenges associated with such change, such huge changes. And so it's about reskilling, upskilling, bringing people along with us in the change process. The fourth area is an opportunity engines that we've called it. That means, as I said before, turning challenges and risks into opportunities. So it's not just about the language. It's also about actually developing policies and strategies and approaches which will turn challenges into opportunities. For example, we could be a world leader in energy solutions, drawing on, based on the climate challenge, for example. We could be an exemplar for urban design and new housing approaches, building on the reflecting the challenge that we face in the housing sector. And for example, we could be a leader in aged care technologies. So the next element is about that's all well and good, but we have to have a very strong business environment. Our regulations need to ensure that they don't impose unnecessary costly burdens on industry and community. We have to have a joined up approach to regulatory reform and the business environment in general. And the final element is we need to have the architecture in place to support all of this. And that means institutional arrangements which facilitate and promote collaboration, cooperation, synergies, and drawing and building on community engagement as well.
What I love about this, Anand, we're listening to Anand Kulkarni and Robert Masters on that Optimism Man podcast, and we're talking about the optimism economy. So that's really comprehensive, Anand. So we're not just dreamers, we're not just saying, let's be optimistic for the sake of it. Optimism is what we need for the tough yards ahead. So it's a great plan.
Thank you. Yes, look, it builds on a lot of work that the centre has done in the past. It builds on deliberations and discussions with people. I mean, I note the very important work done by the University of Sydney, which actually has demonstrated econometrically that optimism is vital for business growth, productivity, and innovation. So this is not, as you say, this is not just some pipe dream. This has actually got some theoretical and analytical foundations and underpinnings.
Look, before I bring Rob in on the optimism principle, you've mentioned there the research by the University of Sydney Business School, which they call the optimism effect. And 25 years of OECD data shows that at the corporate level and the country level, a more optimistic organisation, a more optimistic country, does better in capital formation, does better in productivity, does better in innovation. So I think it locks together, doesn't it? The optimism effect and
Yes.
the optimism economy are scones, jam and cream together, aren't
That's right. And the optimism effect also says that, yes, optimism is vital for national productivity and firm level productivity and innovation and growth, but it also needs to be supported by some concrete policies in terms of technology development and diffusion, skills development. Government regulatory policy and so on. And that again is very consistent with the optimistic economy that we're
they?
providing.
What's interesting, I've just come back from the small island states in the Pacific. The other couple of weeks ago, I talked to Carol Graham, who's one of the lead development economists at Brookings Institute. And Carol's research was originally in Peruvian peasants
Oh.
and demonstrated that their optimism and their hustle, you've got five corn cobs, you barbecue them, and you sell them on a street corner. It's summertime, you sell beach balls on the waterfront. And then she's taken it even when we look at the American election, and we look at the rust bucket states like Michigan and Wisconsin. What's interesting is that the Black and Latino communities are more optimistic and they take action. So they invest in education for their kids,
Yeah.
whereas that unemployed, dissatisfied group looks to Donald Trump as their savior.
Yeah. And interestingly, some very good examples in India of villages which do not have great technology or access to research and development, but are actually thriving little innovation ecosystems themselves. They draw on the skills and ingenuity of people, linking traditional craft with modern ways of doing things. And so it's a very interesting mix and meld of capabilities in remote villages in India.
Yeah, look at Chogma. I was talking to some Africans, and they're talking about just a little example they'd seen in Cameroon, where a little girl had learnt how to do fabrics and little bits of items of clothing by watching YouTube, and she had a disabled friend who was doing the designs. She was crafting them, and they were selling them on Instagram. And I think, it doesn't matter whether you're in a little village in Cameroon or a small island state or, in Melbourne, the opportunities are there.
Yes, and no, that's excellent.
Look, we've obviously built this on the optimism principle. And the optimism principle is the answer to life's most pressing challenges is optimism. So Rob Masters, 10 years of research synthesized into one sentence. Do you want to tell us about that optimism principle which underpins the optimism economy and obviously powered by the optimism effect?
Thank you, Victor. Yes, look, the optimism principle dismisses wishful thinking. It's not wishful thinking, how a lot of people associate with optimism. This is a strategic asset. And as Anand said earlier, it's a timely asset for the nation. So the principle gives leaders, it gives business planners, it gives government policy people a framework in which to design their future plans. So, applying this, they can look ahead with optimism because every business plan, every policy is based on a positive outcome. And that's what the nation needs today. Unfortunately, people aren't thinking that way. So, as you rightly said, Victor, there has been 10 years of research into this, but it gives people now a framework in which to design a future outlook and a positive one.
Yeah, I think one of the things is language. I'm intrigued, and I've got to do a lot more work on this. That, for instance, GHD recently did a study on confidence and optimism in leadership for the next 30 years. And the countries that were rock bottom were all English speaking, right? It's not the same thing happening in French or Spanish or Filipino languages or the like. So I'm intrigued by what's happening. But I think when we frame policy always as a problem to be solved rather than an opportunity, it always starts out in a sort of bleak way, doesn't it?
That's exactly right, Victor. Optimism, strategy that basically fuels and drives meaningful actions and results. If you look at it in that way and apply it in that way, that is where you'll get the outcomes that you want. So it's a building strategy. It's probably the best phrase I could use for it. But it's not just about setting goals. It's about believing that positive outcomes lie ahead in what you're actually doing. So optimism, in my thinking, is the how and the why that brings purpose and clarity and resilience for every strategy. But it builds it within the nation as well. So people want that type of clarity, and they want a sense of purpose, and this will contribute to building the resilience within the communities in which.
Yeah, I looked in my little black book, Rob, and I found an old thing you said to me, which was, it doesn't matter what strategy you adopt to achieve your goals, as long as they include optimism in the how and why. Now, I reckon it picks up everything in the optimism economy and the optimism principle. Include optimism in the how and why. Do you still stand by that?
I still stand very strongly by that because if you're doing anything, it's how and why are we actually doing it? Or put it in reverse. Why are we doing it? And then how do we actually do it? That's really the optimism principle at the heart.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Anand? Strategy and optimism. Again, it's like a husband and wife, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just back on Robert's point, I mean, if you start from a policy point of view, which is a negative one, then automatically your responses are going to be couched in that negative domain. And it's going to be about correcting failure, correcting problems, rather than thinking of them as, look, these are opportunities to be seized, to be identified, to be grabbed, and that transforms the policy agenda and debate. So we go from a automatically a correction mechanism to an enlargement enhancement mechanism.
Oh, look, I think I tell you what, it works for me, and the number of positive emails and messages I've had, I think people really, really love this notion of the optimism economy built on the optimism principle and built on the optimism effect.
It
So,
could,
oh,
let's
please,
just go
Rob.
straight back to just supporting what Anand was saying. It means that in policies and in business plans, it encourages entrepreneurship, but it also supports R&D, as what Anand was saying earlier, and it protects intellectual property as well. So it's all about building this culture of trust, and I'm very disappointed in the world that we have a lack of trust in both the business sector and the government sector. So optimism, and in terms of the economic optimism, the optimism principle, actually builds a culture of trust within societies. So if people believe their efforts are valued and supported, they are more inclined to be innovative in the way they take bold steps forward.
And you don't need to be passive. You don't need to wait for the national leader or the company leader to take the step. The nice thing about this notion of the optimism economy, the optimism principle, is you're the leader of your own life. Oftentimes people say, oh, people are, feel that they've got no control, but they actually do have control in the mindset that they adopt, the opportunities around them.
Yeah, I think there's a very interesting quote which I came across a little while back, which says, if you want to walk fast, walk alone. But if you want to walk far, walk together. So that encapsulates the longer term, the cooperation, collaboration, linking in with each other, etc. So.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I, recently, Kahneman, the great economist, died. And I did love that quote, and you popped it into the paper too. He said, optimistic people play a disproportionate role in shaping our lives. Their decisions make a difference. They are inventors, entrepreneurs, and political and military leaders. They're not average people. So those risk takers. I know, Rob, when I've talked to you in the past about leadership, you've talked, for instance, about Sir John Monash, the great Australian leader, both in war and then in peace.
That's exactly right, Victor. I mean, he was a visionary for a start, but he also respected the people that were behind him, and he ensured that the people that were behind him were looked after. And that's the resilience aspect of what the optimism principle and the economic optimism is all about. You look after people, but you take them along on a vision. So that's the driver that he had. He had it in the First World War with all his troops. In fact, there are books that are written that he virtually revolutionized war as a result of the way he approached the strategies that he put into effect to the First World War. He turned around the European aspects of the war with his principles and the way he looked at things. And this is what we're talking here. I mean, to me, this is the opportunity Australia has to have a national trait. We could redefine, as Anand said earlier, the country's position on the world stage. And at the moment, I would hope that those that listen to this podcast and those that read the paper will actually pick it up and start to think along those lines.
Exactly. So anyone who's listening, I'll put in the notes, I'll pop in the URL, but just Google the optimism economy, a national framework for economic optimism, and it will pop up with you. So the challenge to both of you, so I know our Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, on the day that he was sworn in, talked about the only messages I want from my government are the hope and optimism that characterise the Australian people. Yet optimism has been on the way down. It doesn't matter what he says, it doesn't matter what the leader of the opposition says. We have a media that is so mean that they go on the attack no matter what you do. And I've just come back from CHOGM, the Commonwealth Heads of Government. And as you know, I went there to be a bit of a pest. And, in the People's Forum, I asked what makes people optimistic. And in the Business Forum, I asked people what makes them optimistic. And we had the Premier of the Cayman Islands, for instance, stepping up. But what, my little bit of success, my joy coming out of CHOGM in Samoa was the heads reaffirmed their commitment to include, respect, understand, support, and strengthen the voice and agency of the youth, an integral part of the Commonwealth, and to restore hope and optimism in our common future. So what do you both reckon? Is this the opportunity, not just for our Prime Minister, and our Governor General has said she wants to be a leader of hope and optimism. Is this an open door for Australia to take the global lead on the optimism economy, the optimism principle?
Yes, I believe so. And this is the moment. We're surrounded by negativity, crisis talks. And as you said rightly, Victor, the media is unrelentingly negative. If you look at any news bulletin, it's disproportionately gloom and doom. And that in itself is it sets off a vicious cycle. It feeds negatively into trust and accountability and so on, which feeds back into the media cycle, and it just reinforces each other. So I think this is actually a pivotal moment for Australia and the world. This is the opportunity for Australia to take real leadership based on an optimistic economy framework. Yes. And I think that what you said, what the Prime Minister said, what the Governor General said, is the opening the door for us, for sure. It needs a concerted, collaborative, agreed upon effort by all in the community, though. So it can't be broken down into partisan politics and game playing and gamesmanship. It needs that collaborative, unified approach.
And I think the opportunity is there for us. I mean, yesterday I wrote letters to a number of prominent Australians and international figures, reminding them of that commitment from CHOGM and asking, Centre for Optimism is the only organisation in Australia and the Commonwealth which is devoted to fostering optimism. And I said, well, what can we do to help?
Yeah, I think that's a lever for people to take action, because both the principle and the economic optimism sets all the frameworks for people to actually adopt them and put them into practice. I mean, to me, it's not only a stabilizer, but it's also an amplifier, because when a country actively promotes an optimistic outlook, it becomes resilient, even in crisis. People work together and they become resilient. They build up the resilience. And a culture looking for possibilities, even in tough times, can inspire each other to band together and find innovative solutions. As Anne was saying earlier, we're about innovative solutions. And in those six steps that Anne outlined, it was virtually a collective challenge that he was putting forward, that we could take this next step as far as the nation is concerned. And what it also does, it helps to attract talent and investment. So because people are naturally drawn to an optimistic outlook.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, listeners, we're talking about the optimism economy and that vision, which Anand set out earlier, the development of a unified national vision. Hard work in a Westminster system, but it can be done, to really take advantage of the fourth industrial revolution, to manage the transformation and change, to promote opportunity, to enhance the competitive environment. And we do need institutional change. I think even as the Australian Federal Public Service has shown, there is a loss of trust in our institutions. So each and every one of you listeners, have a think about how you can be a part of this. So, both of you gentlemen, as I said, I just love this. I love this notion of the optimism economy built on the optimism principle and the optimism effect. But I want to ask each of you a more personal question. What makes you optimistic, number one, for yourself? Number two, optimistic for Australia. And then three, optimistic for the world. Who wants to throw their hand up first?
I don't mind going first, Anand, if you wish.
Yeah,
So
that's fine.
I'll let you think about it. But me, optimism comes from resilience and creativity. You know, as I said earlier, resilience is an important part of any country's growth patterns and part of society all over, as far as Australia. And Australia is noted for its helping hand approach to crises. It's a resilience that is built into us. So I'm inspired by the ability of individuals and communities to adapt and to push forward, and even in challenging times, they take on the challenge and they push forward in that. For Australia, I think it's our diversity and it's our resourcefulness. That makes me optimistic. You know, we have a unique combination of people and resources, especially, but we also have this perspective that allows us to tackle problems in a creative and innovative way. And so globally, I find hope in our shared challenges, but in areas like climate change and technology, I see us as a nation, or but I other see other nations joining with us and coming together to create solutions. So this is where I see optimism and the need for optimism to be adopted by not only the individual, but it's in the policy and in the business planning communities that we have to move forward with.
Well, that is an inspiration. So, Anand,
Yes,
high
that's
standard set. What makes you optimistic for yourself, for Australia, and for the world?
well, I don't think I can quite match that, but for myself, it's the fact that the sun comes up every day, and it's a new day. It's a new possibilities, new opportunities, chance to meet new people, share insights and experiences and backgrounds. So that's from a personal point of view. I believe that essentially society and humanity is good. There's more good than not, and I think it's about harnessing that goodness. And with that comes harnessing talent, creativity, resourcefulness of the people. And I think that's absolutely essential for Australia and the world as well. Australia is very, as Robert rightly said, Australia is very well positioned with a unique set of talents, resources and capabilities, and a very good reputation on the world stage, I must admit. All of the data highlights that. I think there's a real opportunity for real leadership in this area. So I see a lot of possibilities drawing on our capabilities. And unlike in the resource economy based economy, where you dig it out of the ground and it's gone, in a knowledge, innovation, optimistic economy, one idea can generate millions of other ideas. It is unlimited. The potential is unlimited. That's how I see it.
And I often think about, people frame almost everything in this country as a crisis now, and the aging crisis and the aged care crisis, and yet we've never had more wise people. If only we could harness that wisdom, how much stronger would the country be? So, leading out of this, as you know, my two top tips and tricks for optimism. Is number one, smile and say hello to everyone and make it a genuine smile. And number two, in Australia, where we often say, g'day, how are you? And the usual response is not bad or not too bad. Change your question to what's been the best thing in your day? And every conversation then becomes uplifting to you and the other person. So, Anand, what's your top tip and trick to our listeners to make them more optimistic?
So when people listen to this podcast and take back its learnings into the boardrooms, into the educational faculties, into their ministerial offices, think opportunity before negativity.
Absolutely. And ask everyone round the table what makes you optimistic. The one that drives me nuts is when the chairman says, "Oh, and what's keeping you awake at night?" And of course, I'm a typical bloke. I hit the pillow bang. It doesn't matter what's happening in the world, I sleep and then I wake up early. And Rob Masters, what's your top tip and trick that maintains your optimism and that others can adopt?
Looking forward looking, cultivate a growth mindset in within yourself, but also in leadership. It has to be a growth mindset. So embrace the challenges. Don't be fearful of failure. It's part of the national, a natural growth pattern anyhow. Secondly, is to build a network of optimists. Surround yourself with that mindset of people that are positive in their outcomes. So that's the essence of the community as a whole. And finally, I'd just say practice resilience. Develop the habit, as you said earlier, Victor, of staying focused on long-term goals, and especially when things get tough. We're all going to face tough times, but stay with the goals that you want because they're based on the principles that we've spoken about, the economic opportunities that the economic optimism provides. So these are habits that are foundational in their nature, and they're taking part, and they're part of an optimistic, forward-looking country, or and economy and people.
Well, look, listeners, haven't we been lucky? Rob said, surround yourself with optimists. Well, how could I feel anything but super after spending this time with Anand and Robert? So, if you want to read more about the optimism economy, easy, do a Google, the optimism economy, a national framework for economic optimism. You'll find on the same website the Center for Optimism, the optimism principle, the optimism effect. And we'd love you to be a part of it. So today, if you've got a business meeting or you've got a committee meeting, just go around the table. What makes you optimistic? What gives you a belief that good things will happen and that things will work out in the end? And I guarantee, just as the research from the University of Sydney shows, if you are more optimistic, you have a competitive advantage in a very competitive world. Rob, Anand, thank you so much.
Thank you
Thank
very
you,
much,
Victor.
Victor.